The summer before my senior year of high school, I had a near-death experience. I was hospitalized for elective surgery, and that surgery had serious complications that resulted in some really scary things that summer. But by the time I returned to high school, all of my previous hobbies seemed a lot less meaningful than they had the year before. I decided to turn my focus to helping my community, and I founded a club at my school that we originally called the Starfish Society. The name of the club came from that old story about the child who sees all the starfish washed up on the beach and begins throwing them back one by one. In the story, an adult, recognizing the futility of this child's efforts, tells them that they shouldn't even bother. They can't possibly make a difference. But as the child hurls another starfish back into the sea, they respond, "I made a difference to that one." It feels overwhelming sometimes to live in our world with so much hurt, suffering, poverty, injustice, uprisings, and to wonder, how can I make any difference at all? As a senior in my high school, my commitment to helping my community, one person, one organization at a time, was a way of pushing back against that overwhelming feeling. And it's true. Every meal we served, every shelter dog we walked, every nursing home resident we visited, we made a difference to those people. But it's like the sea keeps washing these starfish up onto the beach. For each we toss back, more end up on the dry sand. Over time, I began to explore ways to approach systemic injustice through education, witness, advocacy work, legislative change, partnering with organizations closer to the needs than I, collaborating with others attempting to make social change. I realized that direct action can feel more satisfying. As humans, our brains typically have a really hard time comprehending huge numbers and abstract ideas. This is why those heartwarming stories about individual rescues become viral on the internet. You know, the stories about the little boy whose family couldn't afford a wheelchair, so the high school robotics team built him one. Or the teacher who secretly pays for all the kids' lunch debt at school. When I see these, I understand why we love them. It's wonderful to see the caring efforts of humanity to help each other. But these stories tend to cover up the fact that no family should have to go without the necessary adaptive equipment for their child's disability. No child should incur debt for lunch. It's bananas that we live in a society where these injustices seem so commonplace that we forget that for every heartwarming story, there are thousands of others being lost on the beach. Both of the strategies are needed. We need work to relieve the direct suffering in the moment, and we need work to address some of the root causes of the suffering so that it might stop even after the service project ends. Our Unitarian Universalist faith calls us to create justice in the world. The word justice appears in both our second and our sixth Unitarian Universalist principles. And as we look today at the legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we remember his call to overhaul a society until justice rolls down like mighty waters. How might that dream still be calling us today?
Hello, Fox Valley UU Fellowship friends. It's a privilege to be worshiping with you this morning in a time when so much chaos and uncertainty is roiling around us, and on a day we honor the prophetic legacy of the Reverend Dr. King. It's also a privilege to express gratitude on behalf of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, better known as UUSC, for the incredible generosity and commitment you've shown to advancing migrant justice when you chose UUSC as last year's recipient of your Greater Good Project. Thank you. I'm glad to be with you to talk both about King's legacy today and the way social justice work has changed in the decades since his death. Such changes have been mirrored in the ways we at UUSC do our human rights work as well. In the starfish story that Reverend Christina just shared, she lifted up the difference between charity work and justice work. The young child picking up the starfish one by one and flinging them back into the ocean is engaging in charity, serving the immediate needs one by one of those starfish. Food pantries are another good example of charity work, meeting the immediate needs of a person who needs food right now. Charity is attending to emergencies. It is rescue. Important functions, to be sure. I certainly wouldn't want to live in a world without charity. But ultimately, charity work is reactive, not proactive. It preserves, but it rarely creates. Justice work, however, looks at the systems that brought about the situations that charity has had to address. What are the greater forces that are washing so many starfish onto this beach? Can they be mitigated? What is happening in our society that so many people are hungry right now? Can they be addressed? How might we shift power and resources so that our communities are cared for and so many people are not constantly a hair's breadth away from crisis? Another way that the difference between charity and justice work has been described is that charity is rescuing children from the river, while justice is going upstream to find out who's throwing all those children in the river. I like this example because it is both brief and memorable. But like many pithy parables, it is actually missing several key elements of justice work. Elements like partnership, equity, interdependence, and co-creation. For justice work to be just, there can be no helper and helped, but instead there must be a community in right relationship with each other where the people most affected by injustice are trusted to be experts in their own experience and therefore the people who will have the solutions that will work. This looks like grassroots organizing. It looks like following the leadership of Black people, Indigenous people, queer people, disabled people, and all those who've been traditionally excluded from arenas of power by the white supremacist heterocis patriarchy, and who have at the same time carried the burden of the social harms. It looks like honoring the beautiful complexity of our intersectional identities and learning the ways in which all justice issues are interwoven. We must see that justice is indivisible, says King. Author Rachel Naomi Remen describes justice work as service. She writes, "Service is not the same as helping. Helping is based on inequality. It's not a relationship between equals. When you help, you use your own strength to help someone with less strength. It's a one-up, one-down relationship. And people feel this inequality. When we help, we may inadvertently take away more than we give, diminishing the person's sense of self-worth and self-esteem. Serving is also different from fixing. We fix broken pipes. We don't fix people. When I said about fixing another person, it's because I see them as broken. Fixing is a form of judgment that separates us from one another. It creates distance. So fundamentally, helping, fixing, and serving are ways of seeing life. When you help, you see life as weak. When you fix, you see life as broken. And when you serve, you see life as whole. When we serve in this way, we understand that this person's suffering is also my suffering, that their joy is also my joy. We may help or fix many things in our lives, but when we serve, we are always in the service of wholeness. Being in the service of wholeness. Justice is indivisible. This idea is also found in the words of Australian Indigenous activist Lilla Watson when she says, "If you've come here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you've come because your liberation is bound up in mine, then let us work together." Now, King and his fellow civil rights leaders were highly aware of this. They were not pursuing charity. They were not asking white society to help them. They were demanding systemic change. They were demanding justice. And King knew that the justice issues of concern to a Black man in the Jim Crow South were intertwined with the justice concerns of villagers in Vietnam, which were also linked to the justice concerns of the sanitation workers of Memphis. He knew that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Justice is indivisible. There's another important thing I want to lift up related to King's legacy. Much has been said in recent years about the whitewashing of his legacy, of people, especially white people, cherry-picking his words and repeating them without context or while obscuring what might be considered his more radical statements. His complex and powerful analysis of American society, of the interplay of racism, capitalism, and militarism made him a target of the FBI, deeply unpopular among the majority of white Americans at the time, and a controversial character for decades. Now his legacy has been papered over by many who cheerfully quote his "I Have a Dream" speech to uphold their own views of respectability politics and individual niceness. This is tied to the way the civil rights movement is framed now. When Black Lives Matter came about after the murder of Trayvon Martin in 2012, and then reached national prominence in 2014 after the murders of Michael Brown and Eric Garner, I heard a lot of people, mostly white people, asking questions like, who's in charge? Who speaks for them? And making comparisons to the civil rights movement of the 1960s when King was a clear spokesman. And the answer to that is there is no one leader, no one spokesperson in the movement for Black lives. Instead, the leadership is intentionally diffuse and organic, drawing on the wealth of experience and gifts that are inherent in the community itself. Far from diluting the power of this movement, this model of mutual support, affirmation, and challenge strengthens it. The movement is creative and resilient, having the agility and flexibility to meet the needs of the moment when those needs are growing and changing daily. And these grassroots leadership models also provide the space for moral imagination that is needed today. As the Reverend Molly Hausch Gordon writes, "In many of today's justice movements, we see a deep commitment to the same approach, diffused and networked leadership that is concerned far less with one key figure and more with the uplift of scores of leaders. Mainstream narratives sometimes describe these movements as leaderless, but in truth, they are leaderful, bursting with leadership that is shared, developed, and nourished. This mutually supported, morally grounded, imaginative, community-based leadership exemplified by the Movement for Black Lives is what activist and author Adrienne Marie Brown points to as the animating force and redemptive power of justice work today. But here's the really cool thing. This is how it was working in King's time, too. History has made him into a lone hero, rising above the prejudice of his day to rally his community to fight for their freedom. But this is not the full story. Please hear that I am not diminishing the prophetic voice or profound leadership that King offered. He was a hero, but he was not alone. He came out of community, and community was beside him the entire way, leading alongside him. We know some of their names: Ella Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer, Bayard Rustin. But we also remember the thousands of students, church members, and community activists who made courageous choices with their time and their bodies for the cause of justice. UUSC is also part of this journey, one that has shifted our work from charity to justice, from depending on a few key leaders to centering grassroots partnerships and leaderful movements. Founded in 1940 in response to the rise of fascism in Europe, UUSC began as a mission by a Unitarian minister and his wife, Wait Still and Martha Sharp, who traveled to Prague in order to do what they could to get as many Jews and political dissidents being targeted by the Nazis to safety as possible. As the war continued, they were forced to move frequently, but managed to distribute desperately needed food and supplies sent by Unitarians in the United States, and even organized the first child safety transport trains, which became a model then used in Britain. This work was needed, and it saved lives. It was classic charity. As the years went on, the Unitarian Service Committee, which later became the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, expanded its global work, sending aid to places around the world facing famine and disaster. Over time, however, our human rights work began to focus on more systemic justice issues. If you looked at a timeline of all of our work at UUSC that we've engaged in the last 80 years, you see the words provided and supplied frequently in the 1940s and 50s. In the 1960s, you start to see the word joined. UUSC joined in the desegregation campaign in Georgia, for instance. Then in the 1970s, you start to see the beginnings of what we're trying to continue to do today. The most prominent word becomes partnered. Grassroots partnership, following the leadership of those affected by injustice we're trying to address. This looked like getting clergy in El Salvador the resources they needed to publish their newsletters. It looks like bringing congressional delegations to Central America at the request of our partners to see the devastation U.S. foreign policy has caused in the region firsthand. It looked like funding and organizing convenings for community activists from different parts of the world who are facing similar challenges so they can learn from one another and expand their own communities of support. And we are still on this journey, always seeking to learn more and do better, knowing justice work is complex and evolving, and we must be flexible and humble in order to meet the challenges before us, even as we remain rooted in our Unitarian Universalist values. Today, our work focuses on climate force displacement, crisis response, and migrant justice. While these initiatives may seem unrelated at first glance, they are at their core all interrelated. These issues are about the right to security within our homes, the right to restore our homes when they've been ravaged by natural or human-made disaster, and the right to seek a new home elsewhere. As King said, justice is indivisible. Justice is being in service to wholeness. Justice is your liberation being bound up with mine. Relationship and community holds the answers. Life reaching towards life. Friends, may our justice work be leaderful, imperfect, joy-filled, challenging, and flexible. May we find abundant ways to be of service to wholeness, and may we infuse this wholeness into every aspect of our lives. Amen, and blessed be.